You're listening to the Taylor Report, CIUT, 89.5 FM, and I'm Phil Taylor. There's two headlines that are very striking to help us understand the current issue, the politics around the COVID-19 virus. Most striking being that on April the 2nd, the United States recorded more than 1,000 deaths in a day. They're the first country to do that, with the total climbing above 5,000. At the same time, another headline that's pertinent from the Financial Times, which reads, and this is with a graph, Italy has turned the corner with numbers of new cases now in decline, following in China's footsteps. And the professor that posted that, Ian Bremmer, had a comment, which is, Italy starting to plateau, lockdowns work. And that other, remember it says, following in China's footsteps. This is part of an issue we've been dealing with for some time, which is that the world's major countries have been confronting COVID-19 with somewhat different results. And it's leading to a kind of a discomfort in the media, like the Globe and Mail, which practically every day has to write something negative about China, which shows that they're really quite frightened of what everybody in the world is seeing. They're concerned that countries appreciate the level of engagement the Chinese society brought to bear on this deadly virus, and that it adopted a policy which was based on science and medicine, and adequate medicine, hospitals, all the nurses and doctors being employed to contain the virus, contain with lockdowns. When they first said lockdown, the New York Times, Washington Post, all had the said, oh, we couldn't do that here because you see we're a free society, as though a free society wouldn't work to protect its people. Quite bizarre, actually. At any rate, I want to cite those two matters, those two headlines representing significant facts. Which leads to another fact, which I think is important, which is actually paying respectful attention to other people, other countries. This isn't practiced here. We're told we shouldn't read foreign media. We should only listen to security outfits, Bloomberg, New York Times, Washington Post, CNN, CBC have all heard that American intelligence is questioning China's success in fighting the COVID-19. By the way, Italy, Greece, Serbia, Holland, actually Spain, Cuba, others have congratulated China on the way it does things and also asked for their advice. And as a matter of fact, we've been accepting medical supplies as well as intelligence, medical intelligence on how to fight COVID from the Chinese, as well we should. Therefore, we should also pay attention when they get attacked, as they're being attacked by Vice President Pence, op-ed writers in the Globe and Mail, Washington Post, elsewhere, trying to belittle what is actually a great accomplishment. Not that the war against COVID-19 is over, but we're seeing how to fight it, and their expertise is being shared. Italy was very appreciative, of course, of the advice and medical personnel provided to China, which leads me to want to read this, because the Foreign Ministry of the People's Republic of China issues engages in a daily exchange with journalists. So a journalist from Bloomberg stood up and said, quote, "There is a report today citing three U.S. intelligence officials that China concealed the extent of the virus, underreporting both total cases and deaths. Two of the officials also said that the report concluded that China's numbers were not real." Do you have any comments on this? Hua Chunying, the woman who is one of the press spokespersons, said this. "As a Bloomberg reporter, you must be well aware of recent U.S. media reports on the epidemic situation at home and the administration's response. When you raised this question, I believe you already had an answer in your mind and just wanted to get it confirmed. I noted many U.S. media reports on what you mentioned. U.S. Vice President Pence and Secretary of State Pompeo said similar things on April the 1st to accuse China of covering up the epidemic. They even claimed that China was dealing with the epidemic in December, more than a month earlier, before the world learned about it. My colleagues and I have been elaborating on all the details of China's response, which shows clearly that China has been giving open, transparent, and timely updates to the world. I believe you may have drawn the same conclusion based on the daily information released by the Chinese government. On international public health security, we should listen to the World Health Organization and experts on epidemiology and disease control rather than several politicians who are habitual liars. In fact, just yesterday, a senior World Health Organization official refuted unwarranted accusations on China's, quotes, China's untransparent data in a press conference in Geneva. We sympathize with the U.S. people as they are facing a severe situation, and I can imagine why some in the U.S. are trying so hard to shift the blame. We don't want to get into any meaningless argument with them. But in response to their endless immoral slanders, I feel I have no choice but to take a few moments to clarify the truth once again. It is true that Wuhan was where COVID-19 cases were first reported. But where and when exactly did this virus originate? We read many recent reports and findings on that. There are articles written by medical professionals from Italy, the UK, the US, Australia, and other countries, which are published in top academic journals, including Nature Medicine. On the origin of the virus, the Chinese government's position has been consistent. It is a serious matter that requires scientific, fact-based, and professional assessment made by experts. Now, there are various reports on experts' science-based and authoritative opinions. These views should be valued and respected by all, including those politicians in the U.S. China invited World Health Organization experts to visit Wuhan as part of a joint mission, as some in the U.S. are so obsessed with the issue. We advise the U.S. side to also invite World Health Organization and international experts to visit the country and find out the truth. The timeline on China's response is very clear, as you can gather from media reports. On December 27, 2019, Zhang Jian, director of the Department of Respiratory and Critical Care at Hubei Hospital of Integrated Traditional Chinese and Western Medicine, reported the first three suspected cases. On December 29, Hubei and Wuhan health committees instructed related centers for disease control and prevention and hospitals to carry out epidemiological investigation on December 30. Wuhan Municipal Health Committee issued an urgent notice on the treatment of pneumonia of unknown cause. On December 31, the NHC sent an expert group to Wuhan to investigate on site. On January 3, 2020, China started to send timely updates to the World Health Organization and other countries, including the U.S. On January 8, the pathogen was preliminarily identified. On January 11, the Chinese Center for Disease Control and Prevention uploaded 5 whole genome sequences of the novel coronavirus on the GISAID website and shared data with the world and the World Health Organization. On January 23, Wuhan was put under lockdown. An unprecedented, comprehensive, thorough, and rigorous measures were adopted. By taking these decisive and strong measures, the Chinese government ensured to the highest possible extent the life, safety, and health of the Chinese people and bought precious time for stemming the global spread of the virus. As I said yesterday, the journal Science published a paper by researchers in the United States, the UK, and other countries saying that China's control measures worked by successfully breaking the chain of transmission and bought other countries valuable time. Recently, Dr. Fauci, the medical expert leading the White House effort to contain the coronavirus, reportedly said he refused to let others push him to say that China should warn the U.S. 3 months beforehand because it just doesn't comport with facts. The Lancet's editor, the Lancet's a very respected journal, said on the BBC, that the message from China is very clear. We wasted February when we could have acted. It is a national scandal. China has always been open, transparent, and responsible in all its efforts. Few U.S. individuals accusing China tell the world, if the outbreak had hit the U.S. first, would it have handled the situation better than the Chinese government? If their answer is yes, I wonder if they could answer the following. On January 15, the U.S. Center for Disease Control issued warnings on pneumonia caused by the coronavirus. On January 25, the U.S. announced the decision to close its consulate in Wuhan and withdraw all staff. On February 2, it banned entry of all Chinese nationals and foreign nationals who had been in China for the last 14 days. What the U.S. has done in the 2 months, what has the U.S. done in the 2 months since then? According to a New York Times report on March 11, Dr. Helen Y. Chu, a whistleblower in the U.S., sounded the alarm on the epidemic in the U.S. back in January and reported her testing results to U.S. regulators, only to be told to cease and desist, quote, cease and desist, and, quote, stop testing. At the end of February, the White House still asked officials and health experts to get approval from the office of Vice President Pence before making public statements on the epidemic. On March 2, the Center for Disease Control stopped releasing data on tests and deaths. On March 2, Dr. McCarthy from the New York Presbyterian Hospital said at a CNBC program that his hospital had to plead to health authorities to test suspected cases. Can they explain all this? I've seen many reports calling on U.S. officials to stop seeking excuses and scapegoats for their poor response. We understand the U.S. is facing difficulties, and some officials are under pressure and feel deeply for the hardship of the American people. Out of humanitarian spirit, we'd like to provide support and help to them as our ability permits. However, the comments by these few U.S. politicians are just shameless and morally repulsive. As we've repeatedly said, slanders, smears, and blame games cannot make up for lost time. More lies will only waste more time and lead to more lives lost. A word of advice to these politicians at this moment: lives should come before politics. It is immoral and inhumane to politicize public health, which should be condemned by all in the U.S. and beyond. I hope they will lose no more time and focus instead on fighting the pandemic and saving American lives. And then she says to the Bloomberg man, "I see you've been nodding in agreement. I hope you will help get my message across to the American people, including the few individuals who've been denigrating and smearing China. It would be much appreciated." That's from a press conference held by the Foreign Ministry of China. And I think it's remarkable. There'd be more reporting in extenso, as they say. We have people who hover over us and make sure that we only get their soundbite. To me, they're a bunch of crooks to do that. It's dishonest. It's dirty. They're afraid of the whole thing. Why not grow up? Put exactly what this person said. I don't mind. You can argue with it. But she lays it out rather nicely, because this U.S. had plenty of time to prepare. But Trump's game is to say, "Oh, well, I stopped the planes from coming in. I saved a bunch of lives." Yeah, well, New York City now doesn't have enough of anything to fight this. They have bodies all over the place, which means that no preparation was made or inadequate. Or maybe they don't have a health system, according to Bernie Sanders. Now that I remember, they don't. So, yeah, the systems are being tested, and it's what is being shown is who cares about the people and who doesn't, or who doesn't have a system. And I say again, when you call a country the People's Republic, you're moving things along, because the people get to know that's their country, says so. And it means that you have a claim on your rights as a citizen. These constitutions and what governments say they're going to be, very, very important, and explain sometimes their conduct. At any rate, this is the Taylor Report. We have other items to bring you, and that'll be coming up shortly.
CIUT 89.5, Toronto.
And this is, as I said, the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto. And of course, we're producing from home. So if you hear a dog bark or the phone ring or a sudden shout, we would call it special effects. We have kind of important news that the Tater Report can say is, I guess, an exclusive to us. Earlier today, I was speaking with a source, as the Globe would call it, in Venezuela. There's been an incident that isn't being reported here much. It is known. It's around. Some places reporting. I haven't seen anyone discussing it here, but there was a collision between a Venezuelan boat, a Coast Guard vessel, and a Portuguese vessel. And given the crisis, given the fact that the United States has been using this current pandemic as a kind of to add to its weaponry, naturally everyone should be, is, and should be watching closely. When something like this occurs, the Coast Guard vessel of Venezuela tried to block this Portuguese vessel, which I think it was some type of tourist ship involved with tourism. At any rate, tried to block their passage, and when the ships collided, the Venezuelan Coast Guard ship sank, and the crew were rescued because there were other Coast Guard ships nearby. The Portuguese vessel did not stop. So here's what we know, what we were told from Venezuela, that the Portuguese ship was in Venezuelan waters, and the Coast Guard notified it of that, and asked for an explanation, and also to ask them to account for themselves and identify themselves. And the Portuguese captain, I should say, the captain of the Portuguese ship, I don't know his nationality, responded that he was, he didn't intend to be in Venezuelan waters, and that he was going to continue on his course, but he was told, and I understand there was a radio transmission, so we will all be able to listen to this. And I gather it's being played in Venezuela at the moment. And in the exchange, the Coast Guard said what Coast Guards will say anywhere in the world, once you're in their waters, you don't leave until they identify you in whatever manner they choose. And apparently the Venezuelan Coast Guard said to the ship, you're going to have to come into the port, a port, and account for yourself. And we need to inspect the vessel and various things. The captain of the Portuguese ship didn't obey that and decided to go. And that led to the problem with the smaller vessel, the Coast Guard, and the collision which sank it. Of course, the backdrop to this is a bigger story, which we're all watching, and that is the matter of the United States bringing charges against President Maduro, calling him a narco-terrorist, also bringing their own warships into the area. So when you have an incident like this at that time, we should all be very suspicious and on guard for Venezuela, because Venezuela also has its own pandemic issues, and the United States is blocking them from being able to purchase the necessary items that they need to guarantee the health and security of their population. This has been spelled out by Secretary of State Pompeo. He's looking for trouble. The expression he uses is maximum. He said, we want to put maximum pressure on Venezuela. And that is definitely what they're doing. And on that matter, I think it's probably appropriate and necessary at this time, I will read the statement of President Nicolas Maduro about the crisis. And it goes this way. To the peoples of the world, In greeting you with affection, I take the liberty of addressing you on the occasion of denouncing the severe events taking place against the peace and stability of Venezuela at a time when the concern of the states and governments should be focused on the protection of the life and health of their citizens due to the acceleration of the COVID-19 pandemic. It is publicly known, last March 26, the government of the United States announced a very serious action against a group of high officials of the Venezuelan state, including the constitutional president of the Republic, Nicolas Maduro. This action consisted in the filing of a formal accusation before the American judicial system, which is not only illegal itself, but also seeks to support a false accusation of drug trafficking and terrorism, with the sole objective of simulating the alleged judicialization of the Venezuelan authorities. The American performance includes the unusual offer of an international reward to anyone who provides information about the president and the high Venezuelan officials, leading to a dangerous moment of tension in the continent. I therefore consider it necessary to make an account of the facts which reveal the perverse plot behind the accusations of the Department of Justice. And I am reading from a public statement from President Maduro. Just one day before, on March 25, the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela denounced before national and international public opinion the development of, in Colombian territory, of an operation aimed at attempting against the life of the President of the Republic, Nicolas Maduro, his family members, and high state officials, as well as acting civil and military objectives in our country, accusing Mr. Alcala, the retired general of the Venezuelan Armed Forces, of being the military chief of that operation. This denouement was made with all responsibility after a control operation in the road to the north near Colombia, near the border with Venezuela. And that was announced on March 24, in which the police of that country captured weapons in a civilian vehicle. The investigation revealed that it was a sophisticated arsenal aimed at a group of Venezuelans and Colombian military and paramilitary personnel who were training in camps located in Colombian territory. On March 26th, the aforementioned Alcala gave a statement to a Colombia media outlet from his residence in the city of Barranquilla, Colombia, in which he confirmed his participation in the reported events, confessing to being a military leader of the operation and revealing that the weapons were purchased by order of Mr. Juan Guaido, national deputy, who calls himself interim president of Venezuela and serves as Washington's operator in the country. He also confirmed that the weapons were intended to carry out a military operation to assassinate senior members of the Venezuelan state and government and to produce a coup d'etat in Venezuela. Mr. Alcala clarified that the weapons were purchased through a contract signed by himself, Mr. Juan Guaido and U.S. advisors, and Mr. Juan Jose Rendon, political advisor to President Iván Duque, and carried out with the knowledge of Colombian government authorities. In the face of this confession, the unusual response of the United States government has been the publication of the accusations mentioned at the beginning of this letter, with the extravagant inclusion of the name of Mr. Alcala, as if he were part of the Venezuelan authorities and not a mercenary hired by the United States to carry out terrorist operation against the Venezuelan government. As a demonstration of this statement, I need no more proof than to mention the alleged capture of Mr. Alcala by Colombian security forces and his immediate surrender to U.S. drug enforcement authorities in a curious act in which the prisoner, without handcuffs, was shaking hands with his captors right in front of the stairs of the plane that would take him on a special VIP flight to the United States, which shows that in reality, this whole setup is about the rescue of someone they consider a U.S. asset. It must be stressed that the unsuccessful armed operation was originally designed to be executed at the end of this month, while all of Venezuela is fighting the COVID-19 pandemic. Actually, this is precisely the main battle that concerns humanity today, a battle that our nation is successfully waging, having managed to stop the contagion curve, reinforcing health provisions, and keeping the population in a massive quarantine with a low number of positive cases and deaths. For all these reasons, the government of the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela alerts our brothers and sisters of political organizations and social movements around the world about the reckless and criminal steps being taken by the administration of Donald Trump, which, despite the frightening acceleration of the growth of COVID-19 affecting the American people, seems determined to deepen its policy of aggression against sovereign states in the region, and especially against the Venezuelan people. During the pandemic, the U.S. government, instead of focusing on policies of global cooperation in health and prevention, has increased unilateral coercive measures, has rejected requests from the international community to lift or make flexible the illegal sanctions that prevent Venezuela from accessing medicines, medical equipment, and food. At the same time, it has banned humanitarian flights from the United States to Venezuela to repatriate hundreds of Venezuelans trapped in the economic and health crisis in that northern country. By denouncing these serious facts, Venezuela ratifies its unwavering will to maintain a relationship of respect and cooperation with all nations, especially in this unprecedented circumstance that forces responsible governments to work together and put aside their differences, as is the case with the COVID-19 pandemic. Under such serious circumstances, I request your invaluable support in the face of this unusual and arbitrary persecution executed through a new version of that rancid McCarthyism unleashed after World War II. At that time, they willingly labeled their adversaries as communists in order to persecute them. Today, they do so by means of the whimsical categories of terrorists or drug traffickers without having any evidence whatsoever. Condemning and neutralizing today these unjustifiable attacks against Venezuela will be very useful to prevent Washington from launching similar campaigns against other peoples and governments of the world tomorrow. We must all adhere to the principles of the United Nations Charter to prevent excessive unilateralism from leading to international chaos. Brothers and sisters of the world, you can be absolutely sure that Venezuela will stand firm in its fight for peace, and that under any circumstances, it will prevail. No imperialist aggression, however ferocious it may be, will divert us from the sovereign and independent path that we have forged for 200 years, nor will it distance us from the sacred obligation to preserve the life and health of our people in the face of the frightening global pandemic of COVID-19. I take this opportunity to express my solidarity and that of the people of Venezuela to all the peoples who today also suffer serious consequences from the effects of the pandemic. If we are obliged to draw any lesson from this difficult experience, It is precisely that only together we can move forward. The political and economic models that advocate selfishness and individualism have demonstrated their total failure to face this situation. Let us firmly advance towards a new world with justice and social equality, in which happiness and fullness of the human being is the center of our actions. I appreciate the solidarity that you have permanently expressed towards my country and my people, denouncing the criminal blockade to which we and many other nations are subjected. I take this opportunity to reiterate my respect and affection, and to invite you to continue united, plowing to a future of hope and dignity. And that is a statement from President Nicolas Maduro. And I have to underline, and this is the Taylor Report wants you to know, and we have just pointed out that now we have this provocative situation with a Portuguese ship. And there's also news that U.S. military personnel are functioning in Colombia. There's also talk of the Brazilian military being involved. And clearly, it's they are taking advantage of this current issue with the pandemic to what they call exercise maximum pressure on Venezuela. And of course, they're doing the same with Iran. They're making sure that they take every opportunity to see if they can cause regime change around the world. And so we need to be alert to this. I hope that our politicians in Canada and the U.S. will speak out. Apropos, we should say that something remarkable has happened in the U.S., that 30 Congress members of Congress, including Bernie Sanders, the Congresswomen who've been distinguishing themselves for their opposition to imperialism, and this is quite remarkable. American Congress now has members who are addressing these problems. They have issued a statement calling on the Trump administration to lift its sanctions against the Islamic Republic. And I can hardly believe I'm saying this, but Joe Biden has apparently joined with them in this statement. I don't know if he signed their statement, but he has gone on record that he thinks that the U.S. should practice humanitarianism in the current crisis of the COVID-19, and they should lift the sanctions on Iran. This is quite a tangled argument, by the way, because the game is being played. The U.S. likes to say, well, we're not enforcing any sanctions on medicine, but everyone knows that those companies and banks and whatnot handling the funds are afraid that if they were to provide the funds that Iran would need, that without a clear commitment, you might say put it in writing, they're not going to be helping because they're afraid of the sanctions. And people are speaking up on this. So 30 members of Congress, there's no members of the Canadian Parliament that I know of have said a word. I have full confidence, without consulting with Matt, I'm sure Dimitri Lascaris would be in favor of this. He certainly spoke out on Venezuela. We know that he's opposed to this inhumane practice of sanctions against people, and particularly on the matter of medicine, humanitarian assistance. There is a hashtag, and I urge everybody to consult it. It's called End COVID sanctions. And there are many people signing on to this. And everybody, I hope, that hears this program will check out the group identified as In COVID Sanctions. And they're quite creative. They've done things like used lights and gadgets to put a cover the sides of buildings, huge buildings, with that slogan, In COVID Sanctions. And just to support this, I'm looking at a statement from the Special Rapporteur of the United Nations on the right to food. And she says, the continued imposition of crippling economic sanctions on Syria, Venezuela, Iran, Cuba, Zimbabwe, among others, severely undermines the ordinary citizen's fundamental right to sufficient and adequate food. That's from the UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Food. Of course, I think all parties now are ready to pay lip service to that, but we need action, and we need people to get behind this movement, such as In COVID Sanctions. And this is the Taylor Report, and I should mention along the way, for our regular listeners, Brother Conlon is not with me. He's in his own domicile and conducting his own program, of course, on Wednesdays. That's Classical Underground, 6 to 8, if I've got right. Might be 6 to 9. You see, you're not here to remind me, but and we're not at this moment in a position to be conducting our usual interviews. Maybe for next week we'll figure that out and be able to do it. Let's remark on some news here. I get a kick out of it. I hate to say it, put it that way. Boris Johnson has been hospitalized. I'm doing this on Sunday evening. He's gone into the hospital today. So these are curious times. The Prime Minister has gone to the hospital, and the Queen has made an announcement. So, I mean, try to put those two things together. The Queen has taken over, so everything's in good hands. And we'll see what all this means. Just on that matter, what's going on with the British? They have now we have a new man in taking over in the Labour Party, who apparently is a knockoff of Tony Blair. He is a millionaire. He lives in London. He was opposed to Brexit, and he went to all the best schools. So, Jeremy Corbyn, here you see him, now you see him, now you don't. There's a wonderful article I urge everybody to find it, by George Galloway, summarizing what happened. And basically he said three things got him. He was, the British press mounted a slanderous, smearing, dishonest, lying series of articles saying that he was tolerating anti-Semitism, or was himself one. And they wouldn't let up on that. It's all malarkey. And anybody knows Jeremy Corbyn's record. And just all you have to do is actually watch the guy. You would know that's all ridiculous. But that did it. And of course, the fact that according to Galloway, he wobbled, of course, he had said that he was going to, whatever the British people decided on the referendum, that would be the decision. And they decided on Brexit, but the inner circles of the Labour Party, like the inner circles of all these lousy bourgeois parties, they knew better, and so they got him to wobble. And there's two things wrong. One, of course, is that when the people decide, and you say you were with them, you should support. And we know the history of Jeremy Corbyn is that actually from his years back, he actually was one of those who was a Eurosceptic. He didn't believe in the beginning in this. So he would have been very comfortable, but he decided he had to wobble to please the Blairites, and that did him in. And the other thing that Galloway says, and this is very interesting, of course, when you talk about politicians, how they function, he says Jerry Corbyn is a rather nice man. And when he came in with a terrific mandate, there were a lot of people who, I would call them scabs, around from the old Blair gang. And he tolerated them. And people around him told him, you better get rid of those people. But he tried the thing which is often recommended to politicians, that you keep your enemies close to you. They got close enough to him to undermine him. Anyway, it's too bad. But it's nicely written about by George Galloway, and it's they call this a cautionary tale. I would urge our listeners to find that. That was in an RT. And again, this is the Taylor Report under unusual circumstances. And we all hope that we conquer COVID-19 and be back in the studio. But now we're cobbling it together, as it were. I want to comment on some news here. The governor of New York has said something really helpful on my mind. He thanked the other day people who had provided thousands of, I think it was, pardon me, ventilators, very important, at least 1,000 ventilators. He said that it had been provided by two groups, the National Basketball Association and China. I think they were doing that together because, as you know, the NBA is big in China. One NBA general manager tried to ruin that relationship. They didn't succeed, really. They still remained. I think this is probably the NBA in China showing they still get along and can cooperate. That's very important. And there's others in the American political establishment who are thanking China because, frankly, it's a worldwide fight against COVID-19. We require cooperation. You can't win in one country and lose in the other because the COVID-19 has a way of getting around. No respecter of borders. And so that is welcome news. And also, it's a sign of the times, curious things going on. The captain of the American aircraft carrier, the Roosevelt, I think it's the Teddy Roosevelt, or the Theodore Roosevelt, he was called Teddy when he was president. Captain Crozier was removed as captain because he had 100 sailors on his ship who had come down with COVID-19. He wrote a letter saying something had to be done about this situation. And so, of course, the Navy saw that something was done. They had him removed. The ship had to come into port, and he was ordered off the ship. Now, what's interesting, many interesting things, but the crew members chanted when he walked down the gangway to leave the ship. The crew members stood up and along the course of the side of the ship and chanted his name very tightly together, I'd say. It wasn't mere shouting. They were chanting the name of Captain Crozier, and he turned and saluted them. So the Secretary of the Navy has got himself a little headache. By the way, of course, America is not an autocratic country. They don't do things like that, even though they just did it. We all know they don't do it. They're a free country. And they, you know, they're an officer's views are respected, and et cetera. And of course, all those hospital staff people across the United States who have spoken up and lost their jobs because they were told not to speak up. That's another proof that there's nothing autocratic about America. The word autocratic can only be applied to that country which is helping them out, sending them medicines, etc. That would be China. By the way, I mentioned Boris and the Queen. China used to have an emperor, but they decided that they could save on the royalties on the royals, and so they turned the emperor into a gardener, which I thought was pretty nice. He wrote a nice book about it. He seemed like a good fellow. He didn't argue, and he didn't make himself unpleasant, and so they gave him a nice job. And I think everybody in China benefited from it. Further to China, why have they been successful? And they were successful, absolutely successful. In Beijing today, traffic is back up and moving around, and of course they were never under the extreme lockdown, but they are able to function because the country of 1.4 billion people is able to function because they identified early the virus and they went on a policy of containing it and breaking the chain of transmission. That's a very important phrase, breaking the chain of transmission. We have a different language in North America, and we should ask our leaders about it. They're talking about slowing and mitigating. That actually won't get it done. And that's what led to some governors think that they would make their own rules. And so you have to be clear about it. It's probably late in the game, and there are more than 9,000 dead in the United States. The Chinese figure is 3,300. Iran has somewhere in the range of 4,000. The United States now has more than 9,000. And remember, they were notified by China, according to the record, on January the 3rd, or if you want to say it was January the 14th, I'll give you the few days. But the world was told that there was this COVID-19. It was known, but the powers that be couldn't pull themselves together to do anything about it. They said, well, that's China, but we have the best, blah, blah, we have the best. And frankly, that was January, and March the 1st, America was sitting at zero. But they caught up fast, very fast. And so we have to say, well, did the Chinese do something special? Yeah, they went on an aggressive system where they went beyond just community work, but they identified those who had it, separated those from those who didn't, even if they're family members, put those who had it under care for those who had it. And of course they have a very advanced medical system. Hygiene has always been, from the beginning of the People's Republic, hygiene was job one. When that was the thing that they were first known for, when back in the good old days of imperialism, when they were called the Blue Ants, look it up, there was a book with that title, they were called the Blue Ants. The first thing they went to work on was hygiene. Having communities that were protected and clean, and the streets were cleaned, and they made spitting a crime, and they did all the things you have to do. So this is nothing new. And the wearing of masks, of course, is an old fact with the People's Republic. Actually, in many countries in Asia, wearing masks, as they've long since understood, that's important and valuable. Three weeks ago, we were told we didn't need them. Now, all of a sudden, they say, oh yeah, you probably need that. These are all things to know. We have another Canadian item we've got to make sure we mention, and that is that in Manitoba, the First Nations, the Southern Chiefs organization, has requested that Cuban doctors be brought to help them. And Christian Freeland says they don't really need that. They are First Nations. They are nations. Can't they just make that arrangement? I've seen this story. I think most Canadians have seen it. But the part of the story that I haven't seen people repeated enough is that Chief David Ledoux, he is with the group called the Gambler First Nation. They already have an agreement with Cuba. They've got one to bring a doctor. But here's an interesting detail. They said he hasn't ever been made it. It might be she, but a doctor. They wanted a permanent doctor. They made an agreement with Cuba. But they have visa issues, they say. Oh, visa. Turns out, so the Cuban doctor, invited by by Chief David Ledoux of the Gambler First Nation, he can't come because Canada, for some reason, can't arrange a visa. This is ridiculous. We all understand what it actually is. This is making sure that we do what the United States wants, which is the main prime function of the Canadian government. Bringing me into this point and winding up here, Donald Trump says we can't have medical supplies because he needs them. He said that Canada wouldn't be getting these. And the Prime Minister said, oh, well, that's bad and you shouldn't do that. He also said China, meanwhile, is going to supply 100,000 masks and other things. I would take it one step further. Let us release Meng Wanzhou. Trump says he wants her, but he doesn't want us to have the medical supplies. So I think we should say we've learned our little lesson, and there was no use holding a woman who has broken no Canadian laws. So this is Phil Taylor. It is the Taylor Report. Read the book by Linda McQuaig, Sport and Prey of Capitalists at This Time, a very, very timely book. And I urge everybody to get that. It'll give you a wonderful backdrop. So it's the Taylor Report.